Good evening, friends. My name is Daniel, and I am an alcoholic.
Daniel.
I'd like to thank Sean for inviting me tonight and the privilege of speaking for Sunday Nighters. My story is not a drunk log or a drug log. It's basically a recollection of where I was, the journey from where I was, and how I got to where I am today. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous by accident. I never, ever considered myself an alcoholic. And there were two big reasons why I didn't want to go to the first meeting that was ever offered to me at Beaver. And that was, first, I decided I was not an alcoholic. And second of all, I'd seen the preamble and I heard it read. And in my sick mind, when I heard no dues or fees, I thought it said no Jews for free. So I thought it was going to cost me a lot. In reality, what it's done is made me a very rich man, AA. The fellowship and the program has made me spiritually rich, mentally rich, serenity, and self-respect. When I wake up in the morning, I can look in the mirror, and I can like who I see. He might not be exactly developed to the point where I'd like him to be, but in terms of a comparison to where I was, he's someone I like. And comparison is very important in life to me. There's a story in the Torah talks about a man in the village who goes to see the rabbi and he says, I can't live in my house anymore. My wife has brought her sister in and all day long all they do is talk. And the rabbi said, well, you know what? He said, you have some chickens, eh? He said, yes, bring the chickens in the house. Call me next week. So the next week, the guy spoke and he said, Rabbi, I don't know what you're doing. Now I hear them, the chickens. He says, I'm sorry. He says, do you have a cow too? He says, yeah. He says, with a bell? He says, yeah, bring the cow in the house also. And he came back the third week and he said, it's going nuts. He says, do you have a goat? And he says, yeah. He says, bring the goat in also. On the fourth week, the guy came to the rabbi and he said, I'm going nuts. You have to do something. And the rabbi said, I have it. He said, take the goat, the chickens, and the cow, put them in the barn, come see me next week. The guy came back next week and said, Rabbi, you're a genius. It's so quiet in my house. I can't believe it. And that's what life is. In order to recognize where you are or one state, especially for me, I have to be able to see in honesty what the other state was. And my drug of choice was self-deception my entire life. I asked Sean how long I could speak tonight, and he told me as long as I want, so after an hour we'll have a cigarette break. Okay. I like humor. It powers the winds in my sail, and even at the most serious moment, it can drive my wife nuts. I'll crack a joke because I think that that's really what keeps us going in life, is being able to laugh at ourselves and the situations and yet deal with them in a serious way. I'm going to take you back to the beginning, which I now understand because of a person I met at Foster when I was going there for outpatients in my first attempt to try to change my life, because it became obvious to me that things were not working out and I was not reaching the potential which I had envisioned for myself with my egotistical delusions of grandeur. Bill Gates was making more money than me and this guy had a bigger house than me, so I figured I needed some help. And I spoke to a gentleman called Nazim who brought me back in time. We were talking and it remains a benchmark in my life to remember what we discovered. And that was, in grade one, my parents had changed from Cone St. Luke to another area in the city. And as a result, I moved in the middle of the year. And my home room, if you'd like, was a math class. And the teacher said to me, I'm sorry, we don't have any math books left for you. Which was perfectly okay with me. And then she said, but I'll rectify the situation. She said, I'll give you your book. And I actually argued with her in front of the class saying, no, it's okay, order one, I'll take it a little while. And she said, no, I'm going to give you my book. So she gave me her book, and that night I went home to do the 3 pages of homework, which I didn't like doing. I never liked doing homework. I never liked doing math. I never liked doing anything that was hard. And I got really upset, and I started flashing the pages, and the book flipped over, went to the back. And all the answers were there, because it was her book. Every single answer to every single problem in the book was there. This was a pivotal point in my life. This is where I decided that you don't have to really do what you look like you're doing. All you have to do is look like you're doing it. And that's what I started to do in my life. I became very good at manipulating situations, manipulating what reality looked like, so that it looked like I was succeeding, it looked like I was happy, it looked like I had a lot of friends, it looked like I was doing what I had to do. But that never really was the case, because I always fell back to the back of the book and took the answers out, regardless of what it was or what I was doing. I had an ability to always find a way to detour. And that detouring started to take its toll as I entered into high school and university. There started to become a great delta between what I made my persona to be and what I knew I was. The gap became so great that I could not ignore it any further. So I had to deaden it. And to deaden it, I didn't start drinking because I never really liked to drink in the beginning. So I started with other substances. And I started to deaden myself to what I was waking up to every morning so that I could go to bed every night. The process went on all through high school. I never drank in high school. As soon as I got into university, though, at the famous Dangi Lounge in Concordia University, I was exposed to a little bit of alcohol. And I found that it made a great elixir for what I was doing. It smoothed everything over. It also allowed me to numb myself to the point where I didn't have to even wake up in the morning anymore and remember what I did the night before. This process went on until at around the age of 25, I figured I had to make myself a little more respectable to the community. I had stopped dealing with other things. I had stopped stealing things. And I wanted to make myself more respectable. So I did what every Jewish boy does. I got married. Unfortunately, the person I got married to was taken hostage in my life, because although I had some emotions for her, there was no real love. It was more of a convenience relationship for me. I was trying to achieve something in my mind that I felt would change my life. I didn't do this in a malicious way. I didn't do this in a way that was obvious to myself. As they say, life must be lived forward, but can only be understood in reverse. Now I understood. Now I understand what I did. God was good and gave me two beautiful children from that marriage that ended sort of like the Iraqi war that's going on now. But after about 10 years of being married and my deadening myself to my marriage now, which was not working out, it became obvious that this was not something that I was doing to help myself. It was something that was hurting myself. Eventually, my ex-wife, asked me for a divorce, which I didn't want to take any responsibility, so I never would have asked her for a divorce. But the minute she asked for a divorce, my response was yes immediately, which created a lot of resentment on her part. And to this day, I know that she still holds it, but the story's not about her, it's about me. So I'll take responsibility for that resentment, because I never really let her know where my head was at. And my head was not with her. It was selfishly with myself, trying to achieve some self-respect for myself, which was not possible because I wasn't doing anything respectable. Ironically, there were one or two things I did do in my life which were respectable, but they suffered. They suffered because I would not allow myself to accept the glory, if you will, for the things I did. I opened and taught at gymnastics school. I placed second in the city in gymnastics. I was invited to the provincial team. I did certain things that never allowed me. I never allowed myself to accept the credibility for those things. Why? Because I knew everything else was fake. So my whole life became tainted like that. The revelation to myself one of the first times where my self-deception could not help me was probably one of the lowest moments in my life. In the Jewish religion, when you get divorced, you have to give your wife what's called a get. It's a paper so that she can go out and get married to someone else again. And she cannot have a Jewish wedding without that paper. So my wife had insisted through the federal courts that I give her this paper. And we went to a rabbi's house. And before I continue, I'll give you a little background. My grandfather was a rabbi. And my father was Orthodox, but not what you're thinking with the black coat and hat. It was just an Orthodox Jew, went to synagogue a few times a year, but brought us up with the tradition. And my family, there was never any major alcohol, I think, in my entire life. Once my mother had 2 gin and tonics and came home from a wedding tipsy, and there was a headline in the Gazette about it. But other than that, there was no alcohol. When we went to this rabbi, it was a rabbi of maybe 78, maybe 83, something right out of a storybook, with the long beard and everything. I gave him my name, and he looks at me and he says, "Daniel." And I said, "Yeah." He says, "I studied under your grandfather." And he looked at me and he says, "I'm sure you did nothing wrong here." He says, "I'll keep you separate." He says, "We'll do everything separately." So you would think that because I didn't have to see my ex-wife and that everything went easy, I would walk out of there feeling lifted and light because of part of my life which was causing me so much grief had been over. But it was quite the opposite. I walked out of that place, I walked down the street, I passed my car without realizing it and walked for about 7 blocks in the most depressed state that I've ever been in my life. Because for once in my life, I don't know what gave me this spiritual awakening, but I realized what a failure I had been to myself and to my family and to everyone around me. And I realized how I had been faking it for all those years. I went back to my house that day, and just to bring you a month before that happened, I know I'm jumping back and forth, but this is coming from my heart and not prepared, so you'll have to excuse me. But a month before I did that, I had gone out to play billiards with a friend of mine. And he had brought a girlfriend and her friend. And I remember meeting this girl. And this girl was a beautiful girl, very intelligent, and an incredible pool player, the best pool player I've ever seen. And I remember wanting to call her or see her, but 2 things stopped me. First of all, she was much too young for me. And secondly, I didn't feel that it was right. I had already been going to foster outpatients, and I had been I had my sobriety for over a year. And I didn't want to take advantage of anyone else, so I didn't call her. Coming back to the future, I come home that night, and I'm in my duplex in the top floor and I'm very depressed and I don't know what to do and I can't understand why I'm so upset. And I call 2 or 3 people and they all just literally blow me off because I didn't really have good friends. People didn't want to hear what I had to say. They only wanted what I had. And over the past year I didn't have anything, so I really didn't have any friends. And then God sent me an angel. My telephone rang. And it was this girl. And she said hi, and I said hi. And she wanted to buy a computer or something. I don't know what she was saying. I was in such a fog. And she asked if, I was doing okay and this or that. And I couldn't get the words out to tell her how I was doing. So I wanted to end the conversation right away. So I asked her something that I figured a person of this stature would immediately take the message and hang up the phone. I asked her to come over. And she didn't know me. I figured she'd say no right away. Because my car was broken. She got on a bus and a taxi and came over to my house. I don't know why to this day she did it. And she doesn't know why. All I know, the only thing for sure is for the next 45 minutes, I cleaned up that house really good. And I got food ready. And she came in and within 10 minutes. I was staring down at the table. She was wearing sandals, and I was looking at her pink toes. because she's from Peru and she's got dark skin, she has pink toes. And that started a whole new point in my life. I decided that I was not going to be dishonest with myself and indirectly with anyone else. And from that day on, we kept seeing each other over and over and over. And the relationship blossomed, and I thought, you know, this can't last. This can't last. It's going to be 3 months or 6 months. But I was honest about the relationship to myself. I told myself it wasn't going to last. Well, we've been together about 7.5 years now. We got married 2 years ago. So it did last. And she did go through a lot with me. Because 1.5 years after being with her, Daniel was not doing as well as he wanted to do. Daniel fell into the same trap of looking for the answers in the back of that book. He tried to find other ways to get what he needed. And when he couldn't get what he needed through ways of gambling, he ended up drinking again to dull what he did. And then he ended up doing other things again. And sure enough, within 3 or 4 months, it became obvious to this intelligent young lady that I was not the person she had met. And she had never seen me before. She had met me sober. And now she was looking at someone who had serious problems. So she decided she was going to leave, and she said, I'm going to Sweden, I'm going to Peru, I'm going to be in France, I'm going to be gone for 2-3 months. She goes, when I get back, she goes, if you can bring it together, she goes, I'd like to continue this relationship, but if you can't, there's no way I'm going on with my career professionally and everything with you by my side. And she left. And I'll never forget letting her off at the Mirabel Airport and borrowing $40 from her. And to this day, we laugh about it. I borrowed $40 from her because I had no money. And the week before, we had been at the bank, and I was so happy because I could get $20 out because my overdraft of $200, I only taken $180. These were things that made me happy. She left, and for the next 2 months and 3 weeks, I pretended to myself that nothing had happened. And then a week before she came back, I realized something had happened, and I had to do something right away. So I called up my friend Nazim at Beaver, and I looked for the answer in the back of the book. And when I went in to see Nazim, there was no answer in the back of the book. Nazim told me I needed to go inpatient for 6 weeks at Beaver. And my hands flew up and I ranted and raved and said, how can I give up my life for 6 weeks and go to Beaver? I said, I can't do that. So I have my kids, I have my business. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking I have this and I have that. I don't want to give that up. And he said, well, it's 6 weeks for the rest of your life. He says, whenever you feel like doing it, he says, just give me a call back. Alicia came back a couple of weeks later. And I told her I'd seen Nazim, and she was happy about it because she knew who Nazim was. And she asked me what I was going to do. And I told her what he had suggested. And she said, well, are you going to do it? And I said, yeah, I'm going to call it back. Anyways, about 2 or 3 months later, obviously, we started having a lot of arguments. And as everyone knows, arguments are great triggers. And they're great motivational tools to get you deeper and deeper into the crap you're doing, which I did. And I had a real low point. And I was given a choice, call him or I'm leaving tonight. So I called Nazim up again, looking for the answer in the back of the book. I'm going to go see him. It's going to be okay. I went to see Nazim and I walked and I said, you know what? I said, okay, just give me those 6 weeks. I'll take 6 weeks. And he looked at me and says, nah. He says, I don't think 6 weeks is going to do you any good. He says, I want to send you for 6 months to Ontario. And I almost died on the spot. I'm sure to this day he told me I went white like this paper. And I looked at him seriously in the eyes and I begged him for those 6 weeks. I wasn't doing him a favor anymore. I wanted those 6 weeks. For some reason, I realized that I needed those 6 weeks. And he saw that change that came over me instantaneously, and he said, okay, I'll give you those 6 weeks. So I went to Beaver. Remember my father dropping me off and telling me this is my last chance. Thanks, Beth. And it was. And one thing I never tried to do that year was to try to repair the relationship with my father. I went to Beaver, and for the first time in my life, I tried to address myself. I tried to ignore everything else. I tried to stop talking. I have a good friend here tonight who, on the first day when I met him, we didn't become friends for 6 or 7 months after that. He told me to shut that up because I talked too much. And my objective for 2 weeks was to not talk, to listen. And I started to realize that, you know, if you listen, you actually might learn something. This is a new phenomenon for me. I thought I knew everything. I didn't have to listen to anyone. But I did listen at Beaver. And Beaver gave me some good tools. Beaver gave me the 888, sleeping, and working, and relaxation. Beaver gave me the responsibility to do what I had to do and to do the next right thing properly. Beaver gave me the responsibility to myself of being honest. I created two things in Beaver that stay with me to this day. My theory of following your objective, which is a three-tier theory, and the first part of it is to have a firm objective in your mind of what you want to do with your life. You can set it for 6 weeks, 6 months, or even 6 years, but it's got to be firm. It's got to be as firm as a cube of concrete. The second tier of the objective is every day in every way, I try to make every decision to achieve that objective. And the most important, the third tier of the objective, is at the end of each day you ask yourself what decisions you made that were proactive to your objective and which ones were negative. And then you wake up the next day and do the same thing again. That was the first thing that Beaver gave me that was very important. The second thing, I learned how to meditate in Beaver. I learned how to calm my mind. I learned how to follow the rules. The minute I started following the rules, I had so much energy, so much focus left over that I could apply that energy, that focus to discipline, to responsibility, to other things. I didn't have to remember what I had said to someone, where I had put something, where I had gone and said I didn't. I didn't have to do any of those things. I'm generally a very hyperactive person. To be able to take all that energy and focus it on myself gave me 1 year of growth that was unbelievable. Beaver gave me a leg to stand on. And for the first time in my life, I was driving a Jeep in a mud rally and someone had cleared the windshield. I still had no idea where I was going, but I could see the road ahead of me. So Beaver gave me one leg. And I was in AA for about a year and a half, and I still did not consider myself an alcoholic. Because in Beaver at that first meeting, I only went because it was a rule. And I saw a guy there talk the first night, and this guy was so messed up. If he could do what he did and be standing there talking like this, I said, I'm sure I could do it. I said, I've got to do this program. I checked out the internet. Yeah, it's a great program. Psychiatrist tell you to go, lie to, whatever. Whatever crap I told myself, I said, you know what? You only have to have a desire not to drink, you can legally go. I'm going to follow the rules. I'm just not going to drink, which I didn't, and I'll go to AA. And I got involved. Not to the extent that I should have, but I got involved to the point where I met people, I listened to things, and I did some of the right things. But I never took step one. I might have done 3 or 6 or 9 and a lot of 12, but I never did one because I didn't consider myself an alcoholic. So about a year and a half after that, I asked my wife, now, who we're engaged, to marry me. And at the engagement party, I turned to my sponsor and I said, you know I'm not really an alcoholic, so I'm going to decide to have a drink. And my sponsor knows me very well. He knows I'm not a sponge. He knows if you pour water on me, it will just come off like Teflon. He knows that I've got to squeeze myself first to absorb that water. So he said, well, if you think you can have a drink, go ahead. And I did. And for the next 6 months, I drank. Casually, like a normal person. I didn't get drunk. I didn't have blackouts. But with me, all I have to do is drink casually. And I'm a borderline responsible, disciplined person. It's hard for me to keep that line. After 3 to 6 months of drinking, that line ceases to exist. It moves. And I start making decisions that don't make sense. and I start to do things that I normally wouldn't do. And the drinking leads to smoking, which leads to this, which leads to that, which ends up with total destruction of my life again. And after another 6 months, I decided something is wrong here. And I spoke to Alicia, and I asked her, I said, what's the difference between that year and this year? And we went through, nope, it's not this, nope, it's not this. And she looked at me straight in the eye, she goes, you know, she goes, you're drinking. Now, she's pretty smart with me. She's a nurse in psychiatry. So she practices with me during the day, and she goes to work at night. And the way she approached me, I said, you know what? Maybe you're right. I'm not an alcoholic. But alcohol affects me. So maybe I'll stop drinking again. So I stopped drinking again. My sponsor grabbed me and said, you got to do 90 and 90. And I said, what, are you crazy? He says, hey, it's up to you. So I did about 150 and 90, and I became a 12-step rep, and you know, I did my 12-step spiel all the time with a big story, which was good, and I tried to pass on information. But again, my honesty to myself was not completely there. To give you an example of what kind of honesty I had with myself in the second and third year of my sobriety, it's like a woman who is a member of Overeaters Anonymous, and at night she served her family a cake. And there was half a cake left over. And everyone went to bed. And she woke up a few hours later and she looked at that cake and she said, I'm not going to touch that cake. And within 20 minutes, she says, I'll have just a little sliver. And within 2 hours, the cake was gone. So she's telling this to her friend at the meeting, and her friend says, well, your husband must have freaked when he woke up in the morning. She says, no, I baked another cake and ate another half. That's the kind of honesty I have. Perception of other people meant something more to me than the perception of myself. We and God are the only two people who know really what we're doing, what we're thinking, and what we're saying. You can't fool yourself forever, and you can never fool Him. My wife and I took a trip. I had stopped smoking. I was doing everything great. We took a trip, we went to Paris. 3 days after being in Paris, I started smoking again, break one of discipline. We come back from Paris, and someone who, you know, there's all kinds, like someone likes to say AA is like a big hospital. Well, someone called me up a 6:45 in the morning and said that my 2-year position that I was elected to as the 12-step rep, well, I had been fired. Now, this wasn't true, and I've gone through this with my group now, and everything's worked out, but this person felt they had to use that knowledge to call me, and they gave me a shot. And I said, well, you know what? I'm not going to call for resentment, and I'm not going to get upset, and I'm not going to storm in there and say, you can't do that. I am 12-step rep. I said, I'm going to be mature about this. And you know, my afflictions are always doing push-ups and sit-ups and just waiting for that opening. And without me knowing, they came right up and said, you have to do the right thing, and the right thing is to walk away from that group. Which I did. And I went to a meeting here or there or here. And then I spoke to a few people and said, you know what? I'm not really an alcoholic, so things are going great. I think I'll have a drink. And I had another drink. Except this time, Daniel's a little bit more mature. He's a little bit more disciplined. Life is a little bit better. And the immediate results of me drinking became apparent within a couple of months. Within a couple of months, I could see the difference in business, in my relationship, in everything. And I spoke to my sponsor, who became my sponsor this whole time. I spoke to Nazan. I spoke to my father. I spoke to a group of people I've kept around me for the last 6 years who are honest with me all the time and who know me and know how to talk to me. Very hard. You can't hit me with a 2x4. I'll just pass out. There's a special way of talking to Daniel, and I'm just mastering it now to understand how to get through to myself. See, Beaver gave me one leg, and 2 years later, I had two legs. Now, with one leg, you can get pushed in any direction. With two legs, you can get pushed forward or back. This time, for some reason, I got it. I accepted that I was an alcoholic. I heard a speaker, it's not how much you drink. It's if your life becomes unmanageable. My life was unmanageable every time I drank. I accepted and did step one for the first time in my life and felt a relief that I'd never felt before. Because I wasn't going to not drink for the rest of my life. I wasn't going to drink for today. And the minute I said, I'm not going to drink for today because I'm an alcoholic, not because I'm going to follow a rule, not because this one doesn't want me to, not because I want to be a part of the program, but because I am an alcoholic, the release to me was immediate. And I formed a third leg. I formed a tripod. And that is the tripod that I'm on today. And I questioned myself today to such an extent that although I accepted to speak right away, it was the first time I had accepted to speak since I came back into the program. And I was asked numerous times and my response immediately was no, because I didn't feel that I was honest enough with myself. And then even though I said yes, I had to go check this one and that one. What do you think? What do you think? I'm so nervous. I said, nervous is good. Be honest. Just tell it like it is. And that's what I decided to do. I decided to speak. Because although I asked God that may there be one thing I say that helps one person, first and foremost, me speaking brings me back, keeps me honest, and allows me to relive the past and compare then to now. I agree. The triangle of AA, service and unity and recovery, only became apparent to me a couple of weeks or 3 weeks after I came in and decided of this tripodal theory in my mind, getting technical. I saw this triangle and I said, isn't that interesting? There's three legs on that too. And if it wasn't for the people of AA, if it wasn't for the program of AA, there is no way I would be here today now. 5 years ago, I came up with a mantra to meditate. And I had it tattooed on my wrist. And one or two people in Beaver thought I was nuts when I jumped up in group and said, I got it. And the word I came up with was Andy. What I was, what I am, and what I want to be. Now, I know what I was. I'll never shut the door on it. I don't relive it. But to my sponsees, I hope that something I lived through may help them. I'm hoping I'm honest to myself of who I am today. Because who I am today is someone I like. I like more than I've ever liked before. Who I want to be? I want to be someone that gets a medal for humility but doesn't wear it around his neck. Which is very hard to do. Especially for someone like myself. I want to thank you very much for having me here tonight, and I want to wish you a great 24. May you all be safe and sober. Thank you.